Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, you're very welcome to this edition of Voices from the Archives, the Irish Life and Lore series. I'm Maurice O'Keefe. This week's podcast is The Story of the Irish Palatines in Kerry. And it is a most interesting story, and it all starts in 1709 when approximately 800 families fleeing from their homeland in Germany arrived in Ireland. They settled around the country in pockets, mostly in West Limerick. Some of those that settled in West Limerick came south into Kerry. And this podcast tells the story of the descendants and how they settled and integrated with the local community. But first we start with Austin Bovenizer, who I met at the museum in Rathkeel, and he explains to me why they left Germany.
Their reasons for leaving the Palatinate, there was a number of reasons. It is documented it was religious persecution, and you would have heard that a lot in the past, but that's only one version. And there was an element of religious persecution, but it was very small. And that was really about the French invading the Palatinate and they being Catholic and many of the Palatines being Protestant. And of course, France wasn't invading to turn them into Catholics. They were invading because they wanted the land, you know. And
where was the land?
Okay, you're bordering Alsace and Luxembourg. There, it's southwest Germany, and today the province is known as Rhineland-Pfalz, or just simply Pfalz or Die Pfalz, and it's a wine producing area. Now it's very central in Europe, so a lot of wars that were going on. They were always stuck in the middle of war, and armies were crisscrossing the Palatinate and confiscating their crops, their homes, their crops to feed armies, their homes to house soldiers or hospitals.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, the 30 Years' War had just taken place, and then you had Louis XIV invading the Palatinate, claiming it was his after the elector, the ruler in the Palatinate, had died, and there was a family connection, so he's... that Louis XIV thought that it should be his. And so he invaded on a number of occasions, carried out scorched earth policies and destroyed everything in sight so that they'd have no sustenance. And many of them had to flee into the forest. There's an area called the Pfälzerwald, which is a very large forest, bigger actually than the Black Forest. And they fled into that to flee from the persecution and of the French. And while all these wars were going on, Queen Anne, there was agents of Queen Anne in England travelling around Europe trying to entice Protestants to move and settle in America to strengthen English interests there. And so they'd been listening to that for quite a period of number of years. And so they started to leave, travel down the Rhine into Rotterdam, and with great expectations of what was to await them.
Now, these were ordinary folk travelling with their families and carried very little with them, only the skills they had in farming. And they were quite industrious as well. And when they arrived first in London, they settled outside London in tents and remained there until such time as they were moved from there And that's when Austin tells us about how they managed to get to Ireland.
They were stranded in London and the English didn't know what to do with them. And when an invitation came from the Irish Parliament to settle some of them in Ireland, they very quickly latched onto that. And there was an invitation extended for 500 families. But the because of the problems that were being caused in London and the conflict, they actually sent over 821 families, and they crossed from London to Chester on specially built carts on mud track roads. The ruts were so deep on that the axles actually dragged along the road, and when you met somebody coming towards you, somebody had to give way, and that meant digging a channel to get out of the ruts.
I see.
And so, and there was many fatalities crossing England into Chester. From there, they sailed into Dublin, and they were housed in places like Collins Barracks, which is now part of the National Museum. There's actually the square in the centre used to be called Palatine Square, and today there's a conference room, and it's called the Palatine Room, as a nod to the Palatines being housed there. The Collins Barracks, or as it was called back then, the Royal Barracks, had only been built about 7 or 8 years, and it was used for this purpose anyway, to house the Palatines, some of the Palatines. And from Dublin, then they were dispersed onto various estates around the country. And they were being compensated by the British Crown to do so. Many landlords weren't particularly interested in them. The Palatines, still having these expectations of acquiring land and whatever, would very quickly become unhappy and wanted to either go back to Germany or get on to America. But you had some landlords that were particularly interested in the Palatines, and one of those was Thomas Suttle in Rakeel, or Southwell. The family actually pronounced it Suttle. So he lived at Castle Matrix, which was a fortress which had been converted into a manor house, and he had 10,000 acres. So he initially took 10 families and he settled them at Court Matrix, just outside of Rakeel. And later he went around the country and gathered up Palatines that weren't happy in other parts of the country, brought them down here to Rakeel, and extended his Court Matrix settlement. He much extended it, and he had new colonies at Killeheen and Ballingran.
So to find out more about the Palatines that arrived in Kerry, my first call was back to Onascall to meet Robert and Sandra Hoffman at their home. I'm here in Ballinadreen outside Onascall, and I'm talking to Robert Hoffman and his wife Sandra. And lovely to be in your kitchen this morning with the lovely clock behind us ticking away.
You're very welcome, Morris.
Thank you. I'm here to find out more about your background, the Palatines. Tell me first, how far back can you trace your family, Robert?
Well, we're in Onascall since first they came to Ireland in 1709, I believe. That's when they landed in Ireland. They came as far as Rakeel, and they were in Rakeel then for a number of years, and finished up in Ballymacallier, and eventually came westward to Onascall. My great-grandfather was the station master in Onascall, and at that time they got the land in Onascall as well. They got 50 acres in Onascall, and we're here 5 generations now in the same farm.
And it was interesting to find out that Robert's wife, Sandra, her own name was Mason, but she had Palatine connections.
My maternal grandmother was a Palatine as well. She was Fitzell. Yeah.
So it's interesting how you kind of kept together, you know.
Well, I suppose.
Was that an accident or?
No, it was a pure accident, of course.
But when you found out that Sandra was Palatine.
That made no difference, no. It was her beauty swung it, really. It wasn't the fact that she was Palatine.
But I mean, it's nice to have kind of that connection as well, because your Robert's grandmother, Bob Hoffman's wife was a Fitzell as well, from North Kerry as well. She was a Palatine as well, yeah. Yeah. So on Robert's father's side, it was all Palatine, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so and the Fitzell, they kind of settled around Tarbert area.
They did, yes, yeah. My grandmother came from Listowel, Tranera Listowel, but there was a lot of Fitzells in the Tarbert area and also in the Kilmiley area. But I think there were maybe the Listowel Fitzells and the Tarbert Fitzells may have been related, but I think the Kilmiley Fitzells were a different group again, as you know.
Life didn't always run smooth for the Hoffmans. And in the 19th century, they had difficulty with the landlords.
They went through hard times in the farm here because they were evicted at the out of the farm.
Oh, tell me, yeah.
Around, I think it was 1880, that way, believe it or not, they were evicted because they couldn't pay the rent. I think the rent was risen at the time. And I think the landlord expected the Hoffmans would pay the rent, being Church of Ireland as well, probably. But the Hoffmans joined in with the locals and they objected to pay for, you know, raising the rent, and they were evicted, you know, and they were living in the side of the road seemingly for 7 years at that time, living over in top of the stage and back in Minard. And eventually they got back into the farm again. And there was 20 acres taken off of them as a penalty or back rent or whatever you want to call it. You know, when they came back, they had 70 acres when they left.
Yeah.
And when they came back, they had 50.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Who was the landlord? Any idea?
I think it was Hussey, Sam Hussey.
Okay.
You know.
Would have been the agent.
Would have been the agent, yes. I think so, yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
That part, I mean, that's fascinating. And so living rough.
Oh, living rough. Yeah, on the side. Because I met another lady, actually, in nursing home in camp at one time. She was a Eilish, what was that now? Sullivan. And I got to know her, and she asked my name one night. And I said, I think my ancestors lived in Minard at one time. She said, I remember my grandfather telling us about that, the Hoffmans living on the side of the road, you know, and depending on the neighbours to give them milk or give them whatever, like, you know.
Yeah.
And they had young kids at the time, you know. But strangely enough, it took 100 years, over 100 years, to the farm come back again. We got the 20 acres back. Eventually.
Wouldn't it be lovely to know how that happened, you know, how they got back into it again?
Well, it happened, they were evicted, we'd say, 1880, that way, roughly. Yeah. And in 1992, we bought the farm back in February 1992. And I remember prior to that, we'd be out in the fields working with my father, and my father used to smoke the pipe. I know this has nothing to do with it, but he would smoke the pipe and he'd take off his cap and put the cap on the ground and go down on one knee and he'd be smoking the pipe and he'd start talking about the 20 acres. I wonder, will we ever get it back? You know? Because you could see the fence, you could see the gaps, you know, where the cattle used to go through at one time. It was built up with stone.
Yeah.
But when the briars and everything would die down during the winter, you'd see where the gap was, you know? Yeah. And he used to always wonder, I wonder, will we ever get it back again, you know? And in 1992, in February 1992, we bought the farm back. And he died the 9th of April 1992.
So you know, just in time to see it?
Just in time.
I'm here in the Spawn, I'm talking to Anne Glazier, and I'm talking to you, Anne, about your Palatine background. So the name Glazier, was that spelled incorrectly or is that the right name?
It changed from the original name. It has all kinds of spellings. For starters, they didn't know how to spell it or whatever. Look, it became G-L-A-Z-I-E-R. But our family are G-L-A-Z-I-E-R. E-A-S-U-R-E, for generations. We don't know why it was ever changed. There was a story sometime that my great-grandfather or somebody like that, maybe the First World War or whatever, felt it was sounding very German, and because of the war, he changed it. But I have no proof of that.
How did they get here first from West Limerick? Have you any idea?
Blennerhassett, whichever Blennerhassett was there at the time, he went up to Limerick in 1745 because he knew these people had come and he knew that they were fantastic workers. So he brought a whole colony of them down to Ballymacallagher, and he settled them all around the main house in Ballymacallagher, because another thing they were given when they came to Ireland, they were each given a musket for protection. And Blennerhassett put them all around Ballymacallagher as close to the main house as he could, because they were great protection for him. And that's why there are so many Church of Ireland people in Ballymacallagher today. And they're, again, tremendous workers, made great success of the land. And that's about it.
Yeah. But our people. And your people then.
I haven't yet found out whether they came in 1745 with Blennerhassett or 1775. All I know is they settled in, they were given land in Kilflin. They were tenant farmers until they could buy their farms, the same as the Irish. And after so many years, I don't know exactly how many years, but it wouldn't have been more than 10, the preferential rents they were given at that time, the landlords, that was the length of time. And after that, they had to pay the same rent as the Irish.
Anne talks about her father and his generation. And when he was growing up in Kilflin, he had difficulty with his schooling days.
All that family, they went to the Catholic school in Kilflin. But going home from school, they were tormented by the other students, because, of course, they were very much a minority and they were pelted with stones and called proddies and all this kind of thing. So when that happened, they then went up to Kappa school. The next Monday morning, they went up to Kappa school and they'd be there until the same thing happened with the children there. And then when it happened there, they went down to Clondouglas. There was a national school in Clondouglas as well, which is down below Kilflin. And by the time it happened there, they then went back to the school in Kilflin again. And I was teaching Kilflin for a good while, and the master there, Mr. Lynch, I think was his name, showed me the old rolls where all their names were. And they were all very bright. They won scholarships into the Green in Tralee, which was a Catholic secondary school, and the girls as well. But they weren't allowed to go, because very Catholic ethos, you see, in all those schools. And only the last two, at the end of the line of 10, John and Victor were the only ones who came in and did their leaving in Tralee, in the Green School. All the rest finished school. They could have gone to boarding school. They were bright enough. That master told me they were all very bright, and they did win scholarships, so they would easily have got into Protestant colleges all over the place. But there was this thing. Two of my uncles had it very much. They believed that especially if young fellows and girls too were educated, they wouldn't be able to do work farms anymore. And for that reason, they didn't send them. And my uncle, now, my father's brother, Adam, like I said, he was a champion ploughman in his day and had won matches all over Munster. And they were noted in Kilflin. The land was hilly. And in the evening, if they ploughed a field, they went up to the village, which was 5 miles, it was only a couple of miles up, and they could see the land. And if there was the slightest bit off, they went back and did the whole thing all over again. But you see, we have to remember, there were plenty of them there to do it, and time was of no importance then.
Another well-known Palatine name in Kerry are the Benners. And I called to Michael Clifford to find out more about that family. I'm talking to Michael Clifford about the history of the Benners here in Tralee. Michael, you're steeped in the knowledge of the Benners.
I married Billy Benner's daughter Diana, who died quite young. But when Diana died, I was always interested in passing on information to my kids, because after all, they were Benner descendants. About the Benner family. And when Dana died, I inherited the Benner family home. And at that stage, after Dana died, and I was looking at various items, and we came across a case, a small case, with the complete history of the Benners. And I took a huge interest in reading this on a regular basis and passing it on to my kids.
You have the family tree here. So do you know when the Benners arrived, they settled up around Ballygran and Rakeel?
Yeah, in Rakeel, yeah.
Now, when did they start coming down this direction?
Roughly around about 1780. I know that Benners Hotel was built in 1790.
And which banner built that hotel?
The gentleman here, Samuel, behind
the portrait.
The portrait here we have of Samuel here. Yes. And he was from 1763 to 1832. And he married an Anne Cronsbury, who was a Palatine as well. Yeah. And he had no more interest in the land. There was a lot of problem with the land because, after all, they were planted. The Palatines were planted. And I found out in several things, there's lots of court cases where the Benners had supplanted locals, and there was a lot of problems, court cases in this, because they had trouble from the land, the original landowners, who now have no land. So Samuel Benner decided, look, I'd prefer to go into business and get out of the agri business. So he was contacted by Sir John Blennerhassett, at the time, he wasn't Sir, but he contacted them and said, look, why don't you come to Tralee, Kerry? And they settled in Ballymacgillicuddy, that area. And pretty soon afterwards, they decided, because Anne Cronsbury was from a family that were very big into crafts and cooking and all this type of thing.
When did Dingle start?
Robert then decided, with Margaret, they were very, very entrepreneurial. Together with their father, who was Samuel here, they decided they would look for a place in Dingle. And they bought, and or I don't know whether they built it or not, but they acquired Dingle then into the group as well. It had only 14 bedrooms at the time. And Robert and Margaret left Tralee and lived there in this hotel. So now they had...
What year was that?
That was, I think, 1840, 1850, just after the famine.
I also spoke to another member of the Banner family, Claire Bannerou, who had been married to Leslie and who sadly passed away. And I asked Claire about the women in the Banner family.
Starting with the grandmother, Leslie's grandmother was the matriarch of the family, and her two daughters were... Her two daughters, Nesta and Doris, were very close to her. All their life, everything, mother was very important to them. And then my father-in-law was Billy, their brother, who they idolised as well. Doris worked all the time in the hotel, till she went to South Africa for a few years. But she worked in the hotel and worked very hard, ran the farm, ran the hotel under, they had a manageress as well, but Doris bought everything. She was very businesslike, very good at business, very good with money. Nesta married, I presume she married a bit younger, and to Franz Latchford. And so she wouldn't have been as involved. Well, it was just such another era. I suppose I was always, for 40 years, I was very friendly with Doris, because she had no children, and we just had the same interest in art and gardening and kind of... She liked beautiful things. She wasn't in any way extravagant. She would have had things passed down for generations, but she always knew, you know, she was had a great knowledge about everything. She was... And I loved her stories about going to school in Alexandra and her father dressing up, and... nobody in trade, they would have regarded the hotel business as trade, and Alexandra was the first kind of public school English, based on the English system. And it was in Stephen's Green. But anyhow, her father dressed himself up and he was full of charm, and he, Nesta and herself, were accepted into. And she told me about all the people there and going up by ship from Tralee, and it was, you know, and the fires breaking out in Limerick and having and arriving, holding on to the funnel of the ship and arriving then in Dublin covered in soot.
Yes.
And they'd be brought then to Stephen's Green by coach.
And Claire was talking about the Civil War years there when her friend Doris left Tarbert in a boat to go to Dublin. But now we move to the Latchfords, and the Latchfords came in with the Palatines, and they brought with them industrious skills, conscious of their own identity, inquisitive and curious and great business people.
But if you think a family rented 8 acres and they paid rent, and then I think in 1740 the rents were quadrupled. Now, it might have been easy at the beginning, but I don't know how families actually survived or how on earth we came southwest, and how did John buy a farm in Listowel? I don't know how they saved money. I think it's pretty amazing what the families who came to Kerry did manage to do.
Then they started milling.
Well, no, they started baking before that.
Oh, was it?
And I think the Palatines were horticulturists, growers, small farmers, and bakers. Mm-hmm. They had a great reputation for fairly modern agricultural methods and baking. So John bought this farm in Listowel where the mill was eventually built, but he also started the bakery in Tralee.
When was that?
Late 1700s.
Yeah. And so the baking side of it was is something that I find interesting. I think that generated, you know, it was the beginning of the entrepreneurship of the Latchfords, that, you know, then they started to spread out and started the food mill.
Yeah, you see, I think the baking must have come through the DNA of the Palatines, the way they were brought up, the way the other Palatines lived. There were other millers, I mean, milling flour. Mm-hmm. So milling flour and baking, I suppose, went hand in glove.
Yes, of course, it did. But that marvellous building now that's here in Tralee, the mill, I mean, what's the background to that mill?
That's where the grain was stored. That's where the grain was elevated up to the top floor. What is it? 5 floors high, I think. Lifted on sacks.
Yeah.
Up planks, mm-hmm. and then up on an auger. That's where the corn was dried, and it's where the corn was turned. With these big, huge wooden shovels. And the milling would have tied in with the farming and the growing of wheat and barley and oats.
Yeah. And there were plenty of farmers to bring in the barley and the oats. And
there were lots. North Kerry back then was a wonderful farming community. Tralee was a wonderful farming town. Walk down Tralee any mart day, it could have been geese, it could have been pigs, bonnives, calves, cattle, horses. And half the people you'd meet in the street would be farmers and farmers' wives.
It's going back now in my booklet here to the first man here was 1620. That's Johann Jakob Schweitzer, Schweitzer. And he was married to Eva Rinner, who passed away, and then he married Elizabeth Kesseling, and they married in the Assenheim in the Falls in Germany.
Okay, and so at what stage did they make the journey over here
to Ireland.
They made the journey. They arrived in Ireland in 1709. Descendants of this man, obviously. There would have been two brothers. One was Michael and the other was Christopher. Christopher is my part of the family, and Michael is an ancestor of Switzer's, the stores in Dublin, the department stores, famous in Dublin, and yeah. Michael Switzer was their ancestor. And obviously they came into West Limerick and settled in Cork Matrix. And they were, my great-grandfather then would have come there from that area, it's down here to Tralee. And he got married here in Tralee.
At what stage did they leave West Limerick to come to Kerry?
I'd say my grandfather left, I'd say probably the late 1850s, I'd say, to come to Kerry, because he got married. I'll just tell you now in a second when I turn my page here. And the 12th to the 1st in 1881 in St. John's Church in Tralee. And he was a Methodist when he came, so he had to change his religion to get married. And they got married on May the 12th, January the 12th, 1881. And he was baptised into the church on January the 11th. 1881.
My goodness, who did he marry?
He married Catherine Flynn from Abbeyfield. She used to work as a housekeeper here in one of the houses in Denny Street. And obviously they knew each other before she left to come down here. And he was a shoemaker. And he had his own shoe shop. And they lived in Rock Street.
Yeah.
Above near the castle, where the Castle Bar is now.
Oh, yes.
That's where they had their house up there. And they were their family there then. And one of their family then would have been my grandfather, whom you know very well yourself. His name was Christopher Tobias.
And he joined O'Keefe's firm at the age of 16.
Yeah, he was there over 70 years, actually. He was 70 years plus there as an upholsterer. And I often visited him up there in the workshop. And there was another man there. He was a joiner, carpenter joiner. He used to do the repairs on the timber part of the stuff to come in. His name was John Hickey.
Okay.
I think, if I remember rightly. And I often visited the workshop and I'd meet him there, like, you know.
So this podcast has come to an end, but the project is ongoing and will include many other Palatine families living both here in Kerry and also in County Limerick. So the full-length recordings will become available to listen to on our website. That's www.irishlifeandlore.com. My name is Maurice O'Keefe and I look forward to bringing you another podcast next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.